Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast, your source for all things Alabama basketball. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24 for all Alabama basketball content. Now, if you're new here listening, I appreciate you listening to this episode of the podcast. If you could, just go subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform that you listen on. I greatly appreciate it. And I record basically about two times every week after games and basically give my thoughts on the games and preview what's coming up in next game and the next week for Alabama. So this game, obviously the game of the week in college basketball, all eyes in the nation. We're on Tuscaloosa in the Alabama versus Tennessee matchup, basically putting you in the driver's seat of winning the SEC regular season championship, or at least a share of it. This puts you in great position where you just really have to split the last two games of your schedule to guarantee a share of the SEC title. Now, Alabama's coming into this, you know, after a gritty win on the road against Ole Miss. Tennessee's coming in after a very emotional win at home against a really good Auburn team where Dalton Kincaid dropped 39 on Auburn. And I thought they played extremely well. Didn't play well defensively, had a lot of trouble with Janai Broome and their bigs. But Tennessee's coming in hot, and they're not coming in limping or anything, but they did give up 117 to Kentucky and then really struggled with Ole Miss for majority of that game until they turned it on in the second half, scoring over 60 points in that second half. So coming into this game, you knew Alabama was going to have a huge home court advantage with College Game Day in town for the first time ever, which was an absolute scene in Coleman Coliseum. The student section did a great job of showing up and showing out. And they did in this game as well. I thought the whole crowd really gave Coleman an atmosphere that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, I remember when Oklahoma came in with Trae Young, it was a whiteout that game too. And it was absolutely electric. But this game just felt different. You know, Alabama and Tennessee typically on the gridiron are, you know, always in a big-time game here recently. But in basketball, hasn't been this way in a long time. So Tennessee comes away with an 81-74 win over Alabama, and there's a lot to unpack with this game. Tennessee jumps out early to they got up to an 11-point lead halfway through the first half, and Alabama could not hit anything. They turned the ball over a few times where Tennessee got out and ran and got easy points. And Dalton Kincaid was honestly really struggling to find a shot early on. And we'll kind of get into the statistics here in a second. But Dalton Kincaid was struggling to find a shot. And there were some guys that were really stepping up that typically didn't in different ways. You know, Jonas Adu's always been a problem for Alabama. He got in a little bit of foul trouble early on, had two fouls in the first half, sat most of the first half, but he ended up with 12 points. And then Josiah Jordan-James started the game and was really a big factor from deep, too. So he finished 3 of 6 from three, which is better than what he typically does. And then you had Jemai Mashak just really torture Mark Sears for a lot of the game and was pretty good offensively as well. He was a great playmaker, finished with 8 points and 4 assists and hit a couple threes himself. But Tennessee, when they can get a backcourt going with Zakai Ziegler and Santiago Vescovi, I mean, they combined for 26 points, which, you know, for them is a really good night. Zakai Ziegler finished 4 of 14 from 3. It felt like he made a lot more than he did just because he was taking so many. I think Alabama was going to live with him taking a lot of shots because really this year he hasn't been very efficient. He finished 5 of 18 from the field this game. Dalton Kincaid finished 5 of 14 overall, 1 of 7 from 3, and finished with 13 points. So Alabama kept them in check. It's just during the biggest part of the game when Alabama's up 7 with roughly about 12 or 13 minutes left in the game, they went cold, ice cold. I think they went a stretch of about 6 minutes, maybe 7 minutes, without a single field goal. And that allowed Tennessee to get back into it, ultimately take the lead, a lead that they wouldn't relinquish at about the four-minute mark. So this is going to be one that stings for Alabama, knowing it was right there. They battled back. They took the lead. They were gaining all the momentum early in the second half when they went up by seven and allowed Tennessee to kind of hop back into it. But Mark Sears had 22 points. Aaron Estrada had 16. I thought he played a pretty good game, although he was very inefficient. And Nick Pringle had a solid game, battling Tennessee's bigs down low, about finished with a double-double with 13 and 9 rebounds. But the story of the game to me was Grant Nelson. Grant Nelson only played 16 minutes because he was in foul trouble, and I don't think it was any fault of his own. There was probably 2 to 3 fouls that were called on him that were just not fouls. And there were times where he would go up for a shot, get hammered, and not get anything called on him. So he finished with 3 points, 5 fouls, a couple turnovers, had a really rough game. Jaron Stevenson had a really rough game as well. He had 3 points in 25 minutes on 1 of 5 shooting. And Rylan Griffin was really, really bad. He played pretty decent defense. He was matched up with Kinect a lot of the times and really pestered him some. And I feel like Dalton Kinect was forcing a little bit too much. He missed some shots that he typically makes as well. But Rylan finished 2 of 11, shooting 1 of 8 from 3. And a lot of that was at the end of the game when the game was still, you know, very good chance Alabama could win the game. And I didn't understand what they were doing on offense. They were taking really rough rush shots. They were not open looks. They were pulling up from three instead of letting the offense run a little bit. Just seemed really forced and rushed. And ultimately, that's what did Alabama in at the end of the game. So let's dive into some of the team stats to kind of see who got the advantage where. So Alabama shot 38% compared to Tennessee's 36%. Tennessee actually made more threes than Alabama, which is actually kind of surprising to me. Tennessee's not a bad three-point shooting team. They typically don't shoot a ton, but they shot 40 this game. That's very uncharacteristic of Tennessee. They typically like to stay between the 25 to 30 range, but they hit 12 of them. So, I mean, 30% on 40 attempts. 30% might sound bad, but when you shoot 40 times, 30%'s not too bad considering that you made 12 of them to Alabama's 9 on 24%. So they shot more threes. They made more threes. So they beat Alabama at their own game, essentially. They were plus 2 from the free throw line, 21-29 compared to 19-25 for Alabama. Rebounds were pretty much even. Alabama won that by 2, 44-42. And kind of going down, assists, steals, blocks were all pretty even. Then you get to turnovers. It was 6 turnovers to Tennessee for Tennessee, and Alabama had 12. So doubled up the turnovers that Tennessee had, and Tennessee got 17 points off those turnovers compared to 9 for Alabama. So lose by 7, lose by 8 in the points off turnovers battle. Simple math. Tennessee dominated Alabama in Knoxville with that same recipe. Force Alabama into several turnovers and get points off of those turnovers. And unfortunately for Alabama, it was a lot of live ball turnovers, something that I've mentioned on the pod on last episode. Alabama cannot afford to do. Live ball turnovers are deadly in a basketball game, and it can flip a game quick. Alabama did really well in the paint, scored 28 points to Tennessee's 22. The fouls were pretty much even. And Tennessee's largest lead was 11 compared to Alabama's 7. So my overall takeaway from this game, and those that are listening really know that I'm a realist and I'll pretty much say it how it is Alabama played, I thought, very good defense, and I really hate that Alabama wasted probably their best defensive effort that they've put in for about a month or so, if not more. I mean, you hold this Vols team, who was a top 10 adjusted offensive team, to 81 points, and that's only because of free throws. They would probably held them about 75, if not for that. But really, really strong defensive effort, I thought. Tennessee did miss a lot of wide open shots, but, you know, Alabama did a really good job, comparatively speaking, to what they've been doing. It's just, I hate to think this way. But that game reminded me so much of the San Diego State game, even though it was a little higher scoring, from the Sweet 16 last year. Alabama couldn't throw it in the ocean for a period of time. Allowed San Diego State to move ahead in the second half when Alabama was up by 8, I believe, at that time. It's been a while since I revisited that game. Alabama was up by 8 midway through the second half, and it looked like Alabama was going to pull away and win that game. But then they couldn't throw it in the ocean, turning it over, bad shot selection, and San Diego State clawed their way back with some timely threes, some big buckets inside, and some good defense. And ultimately turned the game upside down, and they pulled away at the end. So that's why it reminds me of that game, and it's just how this Alabama team has done so far this year in big games is kind of they hang around, or especially the early on games in December against Arizona, Creighton, Purdue. They hung around, even led late in the second half, midway through the second half, and then just kind of fell apart at the end. Now, against teams that are, you know, outside the top 25 in KenPom, they've done really well, which is a testament to their net. It's a testament to their KenPom rankings, because they dominate the teams that they probably should dominate, the good to not so good teams. But when they go up against a Tennessee, or an Auburn, Kentucky, Arizona, Creighton, Purdue. I don't want to get into all those teams because it was a while back, but they're right there, and then they just crumble. So they're going to have to get this together, and I don't think tonight was a defensive issue. Tonight was actually an offensive issue, which is something that I wasn't expecting. If you'd have told me Alabama would have out-rebounded Tennessee and held Tennessee to 81 points, I would have told you Alabama would probably have won by double digits. Because I thought Alabama would probably score 90 tonight in a packed out Coleman Coliseum. And it sure looked like they were going to when they had about, 62 points with 10 minutes left, 8 minutes left. They could have easily put up at least 85 or 90. They just couldn't find that outside of that 16-0 run to end the first half. They couldn't find that again in the second half to really put them away. So that's one thing that Alabama's really going to have to improve on against these better teams, which Tennessee is going to be potentially a one seed. I think they should be the one seed over Arizona. SEC is a lot tougher of a conference than the Pac-12, and Tennessee has beaten Alabama twice. They beat Kentucky on the road. They'll play them again this upcoming week. Probably beat them again there at Knoxville. I just think Tennessee's a better team than Arizona, and they should be a one seed. So Alabama's lost to a one seed twice. They lost at Kentucky, who's probably going to be about a five seed. They lost at Auburn, who's probably going to be a four seed. Arizona, one seed. Creighton, probably about a four or five seed. Purdue, locked in one seed. And then lost to Ohio State and Clemson. Majority of those games that they lost are top five seeds in the tournament. All on the road, outside of one that was at home. I mean, Alabama has great losses. But those great losses are going to have to flip to wins come tournament time if they want to make a deep run, because every team outside of maybe the first round, depending on what their seed is going to be probably a five or six seed or higher. Now, I don't think Alabama will play this bad offensively again unless they run into a team like Tennessee, which is slim to none. There's only a few teams out there that play this way and can stop Alabama this way. but I feel confident that Alabama will ultimately figure it out. They seem to figure things out defensively tonight. Offensively, they'll probably pick it right back up against Florida when they go on the road there this upcoming week and probably play a lot better game than they did tonight. Because Alabama always bounces back after losses. They always do. So I feel like Alabama will bounce back against Florida. Whether they win or not, I'm not sure. I would predict no. But I think they'll be fine going into the SEC tournament. Now, that's really all I have to put on this game. Now let's look at the SEC standings. Going into the final week. Hard to believe it's the final week of the regular season. So you got Tennessee all alone at the top at 13-3. You got a tie with Alabama and South Carolina at 12-4, which Alabama would have that tiebreaker. So Alabama's technically the 2 seed right now. South Carolina's the 3. You have Auburn and Kentucky, who are both 11-5. So Kentucky would be the 4. Auburn would be the 5. And then Florida would be the 6 at 10-6. Those are the 6 teams vying for that top 4 seed double bye in the SEC tournament. Now, let's look at the schedules for the remaining teams and kind of how I see them finishing. Okay, so Tennessee, 13-3, at South Carolina versus Kentucky at home. Personally, I think Tennessee will lose the game at South Carolina and beat Kentucky at home to finish 14-4, which would win them their SEC regular season title after I predict these next few teams. I have Alabama splitting, losing at Florida, winning at home against Arkansas to finish 13-5. I have South Carolina splitting, beating Tennessee, and then losing at Mississippi State. I have Auburn split or winning both of their games, 11-5, going to 13-5. So it'll be a 3-way tie between Alabama, South Carolina, and Auburn at 13-5. With Kentucky at 12-6, I have them splitting, winning at home against Vanderbilt and losing at Tennessee. And then 10-6 Florida, I have splitting, winning at home against Bama. Or I actually have them winning both games, at home against Bama and at Vanderbilt. So you got Tennessee, Alabama, South Carolina, Auburn, Kentucky, and Florida. So your top 4 in some order, I predict, will be Tennessee, Bama, South Carolina, and Auburn, with Kentucky and Florida being the 5-6. Now, you kind of get into this 3-way tie with Bama, South Carolina, and Auburn at 13-5. Now, I am not 100% sure on how this tiebreaker will work. So you have it that way. Typically, the first thing that you look under the tiebreaker protocol for a three-team or more tie for the SEC tournament is best win percentage of games played amongst the tied teams. So, with that, you go to Alabama being 2-1, Auburn being 2-1, and then South Carolina being 0-2. So, at that point, you would have Alabama and Auburn tied. So you kick South Carolina out. They're going to be the 4 seed. Next, it's going to be best winning percentage of the tied teams versus the number 1 seed. And then it goes all the way through to the number 14 seed. So you look at it. Obviously, both lost to Tennessee multiple times. So Alabama's lost 2. Auburn's lost 1. So 0-2 and 0-1. So you have to skip down to South Carolina, which is going to be number 4. So obviously, both won against them. So it'll be 1-0. Now here's where it gets a little tricky. So you go to Kentucky or Florida, whichever one's the highest. So you go Alabama lost to Kentucky, Auburn lost to Kentucky. So that win at the Jungle is so huge for Kentucky, for Alabama, because it'll go to the next team, which is going to be Florida. And with that, Alabama would rank ahead of Auburn because Alabama would be 1-1 against Florida if they lost on the road. And then Auburn would be 0-1, considering they lost at Florida. So at that point, Alabama would be your 2 seed. Auburn would be your 3. South Carolina would be your 4. Okay, and I think that's where Alabama really needs to be, personally. Because I think if that happens, then they would avoid Florida until at least the semifinals. And they would be playing pretty mid teams up until then. So they would at least make it to Saturday more than likely and potentially face Florida on Saturday. So all really Alabama needs to do is go 1-1. If Alabama goes 2-0, let's say Alabama wins both games at Florida, which is not out of the realm of possibility. I'm not predicting it, but if they win both games, if Tennessee were to drop one game to either South Carolina or Kentucky, Alabama would clinch a share of the SEC title against Tennessee. Now, obviously, Tennessee would get the number one seed because they're 2-0 against Alabama. But nonetheless, a share of the SEC championship. And that would be that. I think that means more to Nate and the team, Nate Oates and the team, than maybe the fans, because they really, really want that championship. And you can tell based on Nate Oates' comments and press conferences, he always brings it up. I mean, that was a goal of theirs, I'm sure, in the offseason. So you know they're going to really aim for that. They still have a lot to play for in their regular season. You just have to hope that they go 2-0 and Tennessee drop one of these two games. Now, it is totally plausible that Tennessee could lose both games. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I think losing at South Carolina may be favored in that game. I would predict they probably are. And then they go home and face Kentucky, where Kentucky is red hot right now. And I'm sure they're upset over how Tennessee beat them when they were reeling. I don't think they had, I believe it was without DJ Wagner that game. So look for Kentucky to have revenge on their mind that game. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that Alabama can still win the SEC regular season title, which would be really big for the program as well. It always is. That's kind of why I'm going through these standings and everything. Not just for seeding for the SEC tournament, but SEC regular season title means a lot for programs. It's another banner you can hang up, and it's another recruiting tool. That'd be what, 3 out of the last 4 years that Alabama's won at least a share of the SEC championship? That's pretty awesome. That's really awesome. And that just shows how far this program has come under Nate Oates. It's just absolutely incredible. So let's look at some of the metrics for Alabama before I wrap it up here. Alabama fell to number 8 in KenPom. Duke jumped Alabama. In the KenPom rankings, they stayed number 1 in adjusted offense. They did fall a pretty good bit. They were at 128. Now they're down to 127.3. Still well ahead of Purdue and Illinois, who is 2 and 3. They stayed the same pretty much in defense. They're 99th in adjusted defense at 102.3. Efficiency and rating, 13 in tempo, stayed pretty well there. And they're still the second toughest adjusted strength of schedule in the country. Now, in terms of quadrants, they fall to 3-8 in quadrant 1 games. And in quadrant 2, they are 8-1, still 9-0 in quadrant 3 and 4 combined. But let's take a look at some of these quadrant 2 games that could potentially move up. You got Mississippi State, that's literally right there on the cut of being a quadrant 1. So 5 seasons in, they could potentially move up to be a quadrant 1. You got Indiana State, that's right there at 28, that could fall out and move to a quadrant 2 win. Everybody else is pretty much safe staying in quadrant 1. But Mississippi State at 31 can move up to a quad 1 win. At home against Florida, they're at 34, could potentially move into a quad 1. So if they could potentially get 2 quad 1 wins added by season's end, not counting what they could have coming up. If they beat Florida at home, obviously that would be one. And winning at home against Arkansas would not be. But looking at it, they could potentially move those two up, add a Florida win, and that would put them at 5-6-8, worst 5-9 in quad one games. I feel like if they can get to 5, they should solidify themselves as a 3 seed. I think it's tough to say. I think they will probably finish as a back end 3, top end 4 seed. I feel like that's probably their floor. I don't see them falling back enough to be in the 5 category unless they just lose these last two games, which would equal a home quad 3 loss to Arkansas and losing the first round of the tournament and just be reeling going into the NCAA tournament, which I don't foresee. So a back end 3, top end 4 seed, which would be solid. Staying out of the 5 seed range is the best bet. And I think they need to make the semifinals, which is just winning one game in the SEC tournament, to solidify a 3 seed at this point, if they just split these last two games. Now, obviously, you know, selfishly, I want Alabama to stay in. It doesn't really matter what bracket they're in, but I want them to play in Memphis, so it's a lot easier trip for me to go watch them. But I've seen anywhere from Memphis to Brooklyn to Pittsburgh. I think one of those three places is going to be where Alabama ends up. Obviously, if it's at Memphis, there's going to be a bigger Alabama contingency fan base that would be at the games. But nonetheless, Alabama will be heavily favored in their first game and probably favored in their second game as well. So a potential second weekend run looks promising for this Alabama team. They just have to kind of clean some things up on defense. Offensively, they just cannot go through ruts, because with their defense, it's tough to get stops consistently for them. So for this Alabama team, it's just staying consistent offensively and not going through these lulls of 4 to 5 minutes with, you know, 2 points, 0 points, because that's a lot to ask for this team that just struggles defensively to kind of keep them in the game. So that's really all I have to go over. Appreciate everyone listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst at Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network, and you can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24. Again, I appreciate everyone listening. Please go like or subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform that you listen to. And until next time, this has been the Double Dribble Podcast. Adios.